Let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Wrestling fans, and welcome to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. It is Monday, April 24th, 2017, and this is episode number 28. We are here to talk to you about the world of retro wrestling. Glad to be back with you. I, of course, am Joe Murata. This, of course, is Michael Quinn. How you doing, Quinn?
Howdy, Didi.
How's it going today, Quinny?
Good.
Yeah, you ready to do this?
I'm ready to do the do.
Actually, you're drinking the Coca-Cola.
Yeah, do the Coke. I'm going to do it.
Like they did in the 80s, right?
Yeah, just do it, Nike. Sponsored.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Folks, thank you so much for being back with us. We, of course, are your retro wrestling podcast. We've got some great topics for you. I know that because I'm doing the first one. Before we do that, Quinn, want to remind, of course, our fans that you can reach us at OVP Podcast on the Twitter.
Yes.
We like to talk.
Yeah, we talk all the time with the Moonies and the Goonies. And the.
Sometimes you'll live tweet old shows.
Yeah, I like doing that now.
I think
I might get into that.
It's a new thing for you, huh?
Yeah, I was watching some championship wrestling the other day, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to make tweets of this. And then I discovered GIF.com.
GIF.com.
Yeah, you can put the YouTube thing in there, and it lets you make GIFs of it.
Now, it's GIF or JIF?
I say GIF. I think JIF is stupid. There's no J in it.
It's peanut butter is
yeah,
JIF, right?
Peanut butter is JIF.
That's what the choosy moms choose. One thing, folks, you can choose to do is to email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. You can send us your thoughts that way. You can also reach us on our website. What is that, Quinn?
ovppodcast.com.
That's right. And what kind of stuff can they do there? Chat or something?
Well, basically, all the stuff that we have ever is there. And then you can go there and click on it.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, it's cool. It's got YouTube links and all sorts of goofy crap.
Oh, that's right. We're on
Remember
YouTube.
RSS.
Yeah, you can use that.
It's got, and you can leave comments
right
on the posts.
Now, Quinn, there's a few podcatchers where they could find us as well. What are those?
Well, there's a plethora. There's iTunes.
Yes.
Where you can leave a review. We always love those.
We do.
There's Google Play Music,
mm-hmm.
Stitcher,
yep.
Blueberry.
Who cares?
Oh, okay.
Whoa.
Yeah. FMPlayer.web.
Yep, good one.
And TuneIn. And, you know, we're everywhere.
We are everywhere. We're also on the placetobenation.com. If you're not listening to us there, you can always head over to that place and listen to us again.
Yes.
And while you're there, check out some of the other great podcasts. Quinn, I know you're a big fan of their main podcast, The Place to Be Podcast.
The Place to Be Podcast, talking about all the, you know, WWF house shows from the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're in 85, and that includes Saturday Night's Main Event as well.
Yep, and the Wrestling Classic they did about a month ago or so.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. They also have clotheslines and headlines to capitalize on some of the new going-ons in the world of wrestling.
What's new wrestling?
We don't do that, really.
I don't know if it exists in this basement.
Well,
I mean, I'm still reading WWF Magazine from September 90 or 88 with Brutus the Barber on my desk.
As Shawn Michaels Hasbro sits on top of that magazine.
You gotta have a paperweight. I'm just saying.
Speaking of paperweights, there's a picture of Sheamus with the world championship.
Yeah. Thank you to our good friend who was on the show, Donnie, for giving that to us.
Yeah, very big pickup we got there.
Yeah.
So, folks, without further ado, I guess we will start our show here. Quinn, it's my pick for the What Do You Think Of part of the show.
Oh, is it?
It is. And this is someone that I know that we haven't talked about too much in detail on the show in passing, you know, here and there.
Hmm.
Quinn, what do you think of Triple H?
Triple Horse?
Yeah, Triple Horse.
Oh, what do I think? I have mixed feelings about Triple H.
All right, let's hear a little bit of it.
Well, as everyone knows, he had a period of time where he liked to bury everyone. I mean,
okay.
Then he hit the people with the sledgy and all that garbage.
Yes.
And there was just a little too much H.
Was it more like 4-H?
Yeah, it was like 7-H. I don't know. It was too much H.
Okay.
But at the same time, I am a fan of his work in 2000.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I actually think his later work is not bad either. When he, you know, when he wasn't really like, I'm the champion every day, 7 days a week.
What, like 2008, 2009, 2010?
Yeah, when he started to be like, I'm a showcase match guy all of a sudden. Like, he's like the Undertaker or something. But it was actually pretty good.
It's okay.
And I'm a fan in the case of NXT. I think he really made that what it is today.
No question about it. I agree with you.
Yes.
So I guess we should start at the beginning like we usually do.
Yeah.
Well, he broke into the business in 91, I believe he made his debut, and he was up in some promotion up in New Hampshire or something like that.
What was his name? Rexy Rue? I always forget his name.
Well, Terra Rising.
Terra Rising. Yeah, that's it.
He was trained by who, Quinn? You know this.
Oh, Killer Kowalski.
Walter Killer Kowalski.
Killer Kowalski? That's me. Wow.
Who doesn't have any teeth.
And he had purple tights in the later part of his
career. I recently saw a commercial with Killer Kowalski where he's advertising like a wrestling board game in like 1983.
Stop.
On a championship wrestling.
No, you didn't.
It's real.
He was apparently a really nice guy in real life. And so nice that he trained Paul Levesque. You know, it's his guy's name.
I mean, who would want to really train that guy? But.
Hey, he did well for himself. You know, his first mainstream North American run came in WCW as Terra Rising. He started in 94.
Our first look at Terra Rising.
Which is a horrible name.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Terra is Rising?
Terra.
Is that Rising? Like Earth Rising? What is the name? Well, why?
Because he was like terrorizing people.
Oh, terrorizing. I got you.
You get it now?
I got it.
Okay.
I didn't get that.
Are you serious?
I really didn't till like this second. I thought it was like, I just didn't care enough, honestly, to just think about it for even 5 minutes.
All right. So he then mysteriously in WCW becomes a French guy, and that would be Jean-Paul Levesque, as he always said.
I was given the nickname Terrorizing. Well, now I am no longer a boy. I am Jean-Paul Levesque.
This was strange. He was like a French aristocrat, and so he teamed up with the English aristocrat, Lord Stephen Regal.
Okay. That doesn't even make any sense from a historical perspective.
Does it offend
you? The French and the English don't like each other. Why would they be teamed? Because they wear stupid puffy shirts.
I think that was the main thread, yeah.
I think WCW doesn't understand the world. I think that's really the problem.
Well, you know, maybe it was that they decided to put their, you know, international differences aside and team up and beat all the faces of WCW. What do you think of that?
I guess so. I guess he was done terrorizing the faces of WCW.
Now he's going to give him a croissant.
Yeah.
So
if he can't beat him, join him.
Wee-wee.
Yeah.
So then, speaking of wee-wee, he leaves the WCW and who am I, Bret Hart?
The WCW!
Yeah, and he walks into a bunch of wee-wee over in WWF at the time.
And poo-poo.
Yeah, it was the dumpy times when he showed up.
Now, Quinn, you and I were both watching by then in 95.
Yeah.
Do you remember his initial vignettes by any chance?
Yeah, he was like, he had the white gloves on,
yes.
And like he's like, I'm rich, and
I'm
look
rich.
At my cane. And like,
yeah, exactly.
He actually, that music was very
It's good.
I think it was like the better version of like it more encapsulated like William Regal. Like I always thought like when he came to WWF he should have just gotten that music.
Music was awesome.
Yeah.
He initially had a very bizarre almost English accent.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Are you listening?
I don't get
the blue blood thing because it's not like people like that still existed in like Northern Connecticut or something like in 1995.
I know, but it's Vince McMahon, so you know he's got.
I don't know. It's like he watched movies from like the 19-teens or something. And was like, this is what gentlemen were like in Connecticut.
So he makes his debut in mid 95. I remember too. I was like, this guy's. I don't get it. I was like, he's a rich guy. Like, who cares?
I got
or a
it.
Snob.
I get it. He's a snob. What I didn't. Like understand is like why is this sissy like gonna beat up anybody? Yeah, well, I mean, like that's like what they kind of portrayed him as. Like, remember he was like afraid of like mud and stuff.
He was,
yeah,
against Henry Godwin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He was afraid of mud. He actually had a bit of an undefeated streak that no one really talks about, but he did. I remember that. And then, of course, the whole thing where he joined up in real life with the Click, of course, being Shawn Michaels, Shawn Waltman.
Now, did that happen before
Paul
he
Nash.
Was squashed at WrestleMania? Yeah, because that was the reaction to another thing.
Yes. Right? So he's part of the Click, you know, the backstage group that maybe wielded some power, some might say. I don't know.
There was some wield.
And so he was friends with Sean and Razor and Diesel and 123 Kid. And anyway, so he infamously jobs to the Ultimate Warrior in Warrior's Return at WrestleMania 12, which
allegedly was a reaction to the thing in MSG where they clicked hands or whatever.
But it wasn't because that happened 2 months later.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, right, because Razor wasn't gotten them. Why did people say that?
I don't know.
It's even in my brain.
See, like, I know. I'm glad you brought that up because people seem to misremember that as a punishment
huh.
for MSG.
That is true.
The reason he did that job, from what I understand, is in agreement for the push he was about to receive, which included winning King of the Ring 96.
Which he didn't. Because of the other thing.
The punishment for the click incident with the MSG incident where they all broke a K-fob there.
Yeah, and the fob was broken.
And they did the Wolfpack sign or something in the cage. And because one guy caught it on camera, it was the biggest deal in the world. I don't know why it was such
and
a big deal.
And he's yelling, oh,
oh, you ever see that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's like Joey Styles was there.
Mr. ECW in the rafters of MSG.
So Triple H's push is then delayed, but not, was never going to be completely stopped. You could tell Vince always wanted to make something of this guy the whole time.
I don't know why, but there wasn't anything to exhibit that he was that great or anything.
He was a hard worker. He was a charismatic in-ring performer.
You know who was also a hard worker that was fighting around that time?
Who?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Well, they wound up being able to push Austin because of the click incident.
But doesn't that bother you to a certain extent that they were willing, like before that happened, they were like, that Stone Cold guy who's giving good promos and put him on the side. Let's push the blue blood. Nobody gives a shit character.
Okay, fair enough. Now, Triple H's push gets resumed. He gets China as his bodyguard in early 97. That's when he finally gets over.
Yes, because he had some attitude.
Yes.
He wasn't just some idiot. Just I'm better than you. He was no, I'm an asshole. I got this woman
behind a woman.
Yeah, this woman who beats people up for me.
Exactly. And he also got the good music, Ode to Joy, which was awesome as his theme.
Yeah, that was probably his best theme in the Blue Blood character.
Yes.
Even though I like the original
theme. Me too.
But
that was awesome as his theme music. And he started to switch over to these goofy robe things.
Yeah,
he looked cool.
Over the top.
Yep.
Yeah, I did like that.
I didn't like his endless feud with Goldust in 97. That was pretty bad.
Yeah, with Marlena.
Yep.
Yep.
And apparently, he and Shawn Michaels had really wanted to team up backstage. Vince kept saying no. Finally, Vince gave in after SummerSlam, and was basically the pre-DX team up with them in China and Rude.
It just started I felt what was weird about it, do you remember Triple H was still wearing pink shirts and he was kind of a blue blood
he was
sort
still
of.
The blue blood for a little
kind
while
of.
He phased out of it, right?
Yeah, it was very weird. And then finally he starts wearing just regular t-shirts,
right?
And what's even weirder is during that transition phase is that he had his Triple H tights, but they were DXified. It was weird.
They were, you're right.
Yeah.
Now, Quinn, during the DX run with Shawn Michaels, the original DX,
the good one.
Obviously a revolutionary stable in their way, didn't Triple H come across to you as who the hell is this guy hanging out with Shawn Michaels?
I always thought that, and it actually pissed me off when they kicked Shawn Michaels out, because I was really, the jabroni of DX is gonna run it? This is stupid.
It's a bit of revisionist history that Triple H was some big deal.
No, this thing was Shawn Michaels' baby. This was his deal.
Yep.
Triple H likes to act he was the visionary behind DX. It's nah, this was a Shawn Michaels joint, and everyone was positioned around him to to play off of him. Basically.
Absolutely. This was Shawn Michaels all the way.
Right.
Now, of course, you alluded to, Quinn, Michaels leaves after WrestleMania 14, so we get the face version of DX, which we've talked about a bit.
Yeah.
That's where Triple H becomes, slowly to move up the card, right? Wins the Intercontinental title from The Rock.
Starts feuding with The Rock mainly.
Exactly.
That was what, I think that feud is kind of what cemented him as this guy's a big thing.
Good feud.
I don't think anybody was okay with ever... with him being a big thing. Did you ever feel that? It was almost
he got strong-armed into it.
Always. But see, this is the difference between now and then.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very subtle strong-arm.
Right.
But looking back, we can see it was strong-armed in. But while we were living through it, it just kind of happened.
Yes.
But nowadays, with Roman Reigns, it's shove down your throat. You have to know he's it wasn't like that.
Well, there was a point where it was, Quinn, and I'll get to that in a second. So Triple H goes down to a knee injury, right?
Mm-hmm.
Comes back, they have that whole DX China feud thing, Kane, whatever. It didn't matter. It was stupid, right? Triple H finally turns heel. Then he's shoved down your throat. The summer of 99, Quinn, where he gets I am the game, and I am that damn good,
But I felt
Sledgehammer,
Here's the thing with that is I disagree with that, because I already had felt he was sort of a main eventer at that point.
But he hadn't ever main evented, so I don't know
where
you're getting
that from.
No, but
he was treated as an actual threat prior to
that. An upper mid-carder. He was never in the main event scene.
I felt it was further enough along the way. It's not like Roman Reigns where it's like, no, this was just some guy that was a piece of a thing, and then like all of a sudden he's beaten like everyone. I think you're giving too much revisionist history on that.
I lived through it. Trust me.
You lived through
it. He was on every segment of Raw for like
right,
4 months
but
in a
that's,
row.
That's why you think that is. What I'm saying is that it came along a little more subtly than you're.
I don't think so. No, I don't. I think you're misremembering that. It was not subtle. They were like, we're getting this guy over.
You guys talk about being students of the game. I am the f-ing game, JR.
I just felt, to me, living through it, was that it just felt like all of a sudden Triple H is here, but I kind of like, I know who he is and stuff, so it's not that bad.
Yeah, we knew who he was, but he wasn't ever a big... Remember the short tights? They did everything they could. The new music. They were getting that guy over. And
well, yeah, I mean, by that point, but that was also a repackaging on top of it.
Yes,
too.
It was.
Yeah.
So anyway, we get to the end of 99. He's still like mildly over as a heel.
Yeah.
But the Mick Foley feud in 2000.
Yes, that put him 2000, over.
That was huge, and that kicked off probably one of the greatest years of wrestling and a great run for Triple H, 2000.
Yes, I think that's Triple H's time.
Literally.
A little into 2001,
yep,
too. But yeah, that was the time when it established that, no, this guy can go, and he's a main eventer. And like, even though like you want to say it was strong-armed a lot, I think it was a more subtle strong-arm, regardless of what it was.
Reach us on Twitter and let us know,
folks. At that point, I felt he was at least worthy.
He was, I agree.
Like, it was like, this guy belongs here.
I agree. I do agree that he belonged there. His work in 2000 alone is proof of that. He was awesome in 2000. Mm-hmm. He was one of the best heels I've ever seen. I hated him because he was so good at being a heel.
I always bring up that Jericho thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, that's just kind of proof enough. It's like, if Jericho even like slightly got one over on him, it was like the whole crowd was like, oh shit.
Yep.
Like, it was like, this is fantastic.
Had a great Iron Man match with The Rock.
Yeah.
You know, he had a lot of good stuff. But then, of course, after the initial quad injury of 01,
mm-hmm.
comes back as a bloated ass steroid face in 02. That's the Triple H I don't like.
This is where we're to the point where, like, no, we're going to sustain this forever. Like, it felt like forever. Like, this was going to be the rest of our lives in wrestling, was Triple H. and it might be, but, like, I mean, it's not as bad anymore, to be fair.
No, but like, from 02 to about 07?
Yeah, it was so long.
That's a version of him I don't like. And here, to start wrapping it up here, Quinn, because we can't keep going with his career because it is really long.
Yeah.
I feel like WWE and or Triple H himself have positioned him as one of these all-time greats.
That, I agree. This,
like on a level of a Ric Flair and a Harley Race
exactly.
And an Austin.
It feels like they really kind of decided that he's one of the best things to ever happen.
And when he's not.
He's just like, maybe he was like a good year and a half of good, and then that was it. Like, Ric Flair, like, if you want to just, as an example,
right.
Ric Flair was good for like a decade.
At least.
Yeah, at least, and probably longer. Triple H, his great run was like a year and 3 months or something.
His really good work?
Yeah.
Now, was he a solid worker? Sure.
Yeah.
Dependable?
Mm-hmm.
Good in the ring? Safe? Didn't hurt people? Didn't do drugs? Like, reliable? Great.
Yeah.
One of the all-time greats, though?
It's insane.
He doesn't have, like, that many epic matches. As much as he tries to put on a 30-minute epic every year at WrestleMania now, none of them are really that good.
No, they're not.
You know, he's had some good stuff, but so has other guys. It's not like that impressive.
I don't know. They just try to act like he's, like, set apart. Like, he's just that much better than everyone, and everybody should be wrestling the way he wrestled. Like,
right.
You know how they act like that, too? It's like, what? Honestly, you wouldn't have a fucking career if it wasn't for Mick Foley.
Yeah. I think, so the thing about Triple H is I do like him.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think he's a solid worker. I liked a lot of his work.
I think he has a good mind for the business,
mind.
It has been proven
absolutely.
With NXT.
Absolutely. We'll never fault him there. Did he hold people down? Yeah, maybe. I mean, we weren't there. Maybe.
Well, like Booker T, yes.
Well, I mean,
I think everyone's perception of Booker T is wildly different because of that one point at WrestleMania 19. Like, they really screwed him up.
You think,
like,
if Booker would have beaten Triple H, it would have changed his trajectory?
It would have drastically changed his trajectory, yes.
But, Quinn, who are we to say that Triple H made the call to win?
I'm not
it's
saying
never
that.
Been proven.
Who? The point is Vince that Triple H was the one there, and
right. But Vince makes the call. Vince is still the booker.
Listen, all I'm saying is that whatever you think with Triple H, like he shouldn't have gone over there.
Okay,
like,
fair enough. I don't disagree.
It drastically altered like a guy whose star was like rising
in 03 in the prime of his career, maybe
right,
too.
Exactly.
I don't disagree with you. I think it's a fair point.
Yeah,
that's a very good point. But your overall on Triple H, do you like him?
Yeah, he's fine. I mean, he's not like the best thing ever, but he's okay.
He wouldn't go on one of your top tens.
No.
Top 20?
He would. Let's put it this way. If there was like a Rushmore of the best wrestlers ever, he wouldn't be like even in that. Like,
would he even be near the mountain?
No.
No, I agree. But a good guy. A good, like, just a good worker, a good hand, as they say.
Yeah.
Good matches, knew how to put a good match on.
Yeah.
Especially if he had someone good to dance with, you know what I mean? He could do something really good, really memorable, great heel work.
Yep.
Face work, you know. It's not hard to say, are you ready? You know what I mean?
It's not hard to get mad at someone for a dog or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But good heel, had some good matches. One of the greatest of all time? No.
Yeah.
Anything else, Quinn?
That's basically it.
That's basically Triple H.
Yeah. That's
just kind of there.
In a nutshell.
Just kind of there.
Yeah.
And we'll be right there after this.
A Triple H, The Rock says, we seem to have developed a little pattern here. And that pattern is that every single week you come out here and you run your mouth. And every single week you subject all of us to watch you stand in the middle of the ring, grab our microphone, and you say this. Tonight,
No!
I am the game. And in this very ring, for the next 20 minutes,
is he constipated?
I'm going to be talking and saying absolutely nothing.
He found himself a ticket on the DX Express.
Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Glad to be with you this Monday, April 24th, 2017. Here with a very feisty Michael Quinn today.
Yes.
So much feist.
Feisty.
Quinn, it's time for Mount Rushmore and Death Valley, folks, where we are going to put four of the best of something onto Mount Rushmore and four of the worst into the desert of Death Valley. With the Roadrunner?
Yeah, maybe.
Coyote?
Who knows?
You don't know who's there. The Undertaker's still there, I think.
Yeah, he's going to be there for a while.
He'll be there for a while,
folks. Until the Hall of Fame next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Come out of his grave.
We'll go through these, but be sure to let us know what yours are. We'd like to get our listener feedback on this. You can tweet at us at OVP Podcast or email us or go to the website, OVPPodcast.com.
Yep.
Yes. All right, Quinn, it's your pick. What do you got, sir?
So this week, actually, I was a little at a loss for what to do, and I was listing some things off, and I said something about Dungeon of Doom, and I thought to myself, wait a second, there's one. Wrestling Stables.
Wrestling Stables. Okay, so there's a lot of stables.
Yes.
This will be interesting.
Now, are we going to, let's set some ground rules here. Are we counting, like, for example, the Heenan family as a stable, necessarily? Like,
I don't think so, because that was kind of just the umbrella name for the guys
or, like,
he managed.
Camp Cornette or whatever.
That sucks.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't even make Death Valley. It's so irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly.
But
like, the Nation of Domination would qualify,
more like
right?
That,
yes.
Or, like,
DX.
DX, something like that. Okay.
So I get the first pick, right?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to go with the obvious this time.
Okay.
The Four Horsemen.
We are the select group known as the Four Horsemen.
Yes. I mean, I would put them there, too. I was thinking them.
Right.
Also, the Horsemen, just because I feel like they kind of defined what a stable should be in the modern era.
What's a good stable to you, Quinn?
It's like a cohesiveness with the members.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just like a couple of loosely connected people for no reason.
Okay.
That they work together, they interfere in each other's matches.
Common goal.
Common goal. Usually, probably because the Horsemen, I always identified guys that kind of have like a tag team and a mid-carder and a main eventer.
The champion,
and they,
maybe.
And they have belts, maybe, because they work together. And maybe there is a point when they all have those titles.
Right. Maybe a manager to help them as well,
a manager
right?
at times.
The brains behind it all.
Yeah, like a cool logo.
Okay.
Like stuff like that.
Just a general sense of cohesiveness and purpose.
Right. Maybe a catchphrase to just encompass them, sure. like, and describe them. Like, I always like with the Four Horsemen, like, diamonds are forever,
sure.
but Four Horsemen, whatever.
Aren't forever.
Yeah, I mean,
they held up the four.
The symbol of excellence.
Exactly.
Things like that.
The four fingers. The Horsemen were great. I mean, the Flair, Tully, Arn, and Ole version are really good.
I mean, come on.
That's the original.
Yeah, I mean, the original...
With J.J. Dillon.
It's okay.
You like the Luger, probably, right? Or the Wyndham?
I like the Wyndham.
The Wyndham?
Yeah, to me, it's like, that's more like, you got the main eventer, you got the tag team, and you got the mid-carder. It's like,
I agree. That was great.
Like, yeah.
It had a lot of bad incarnations, though, too, Quinn.
Yeah.
I mean, the Jeff Jarrett fiasco in 97.
Yeah, that was stupid. Although, I actually was a fan of the Brian Pillman edition.
In 95, 96?
Yeah, like the reforming after they'd been gone for a couple years.
With Chris Voldemort and...
Chris Voldemort.
Mongo.
I always thought Mongo was like a fantastic addition. Like, I know that guy would be garbage on his own, but like being in the Four Horsemen,
it's good.
It's like just this big hoss that's like, hey, this guy's bothering us, and he just like it's like no, and he just like beats him up or something.
Halliburton.
Yeah.
He always said the Halliburton.
With his Mongo jacket on. Yeah, and he would just stand in the back and it's like, don't fuck with this guy.
Like, he was like your drunk uncle at a barbecue.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna kick your ass.
Yeah.
Why does it only get noticed when I hit some newscaster with shaving cream or a whiskey bottle?
Steve McMichael, don't play defense without him.
And I love that all the Horsemen, they never can get an interview with Mongo, but every single one of them speaks highly of him. Like, he was, like, the best thing ever to just be around. Like,
yeah.
He was, like, a good guy.
You know what I would say, Quinn, about the Horsemen?
Yeah.
Why I think they deserve to be on? Because they helped. As weird as this sounds... I don't think Ric Flair would have been as successful if he didn't have that stable.
I think the later portion of his career was more defined by being a part of the Horsemen.
86 onward,
yeah,
right?
For, like,
that's when they started, 86?
Yeah, like, there's only so far you can go with, like, he's a good wrestler and he always wins.
Yeah,
like,
I
right?
know. Yeah.
There has to be, like, some other thing.
Yep, I agree.
And the Horsemen were that.
The Horsemen helped Ric Flair be Ric Flair.
Right. You had something to not only say the world title is associated with Ric Flair, but a stable of guys. And it makes it like, it's like Ric Flair's footprint is now on the show, like when Arn Anderson is wrestling someone, or like,
uh-huh.
you know what I mean? Like, it's
absolutely.
Cool.
There's an association to Ric Flair.
Right.
If Tully's in the ring.
And it puts anybody that they would in the future put in the Four Horsemen. Over, because it's like, this guy's tight with Ric Flair, so he must be important.
Except Paul Roma.
Yeah, except Paul Roma, I was going to say, but yeah, other than Paul Roma.
I'd have to say they go on, Quinn. I think that's a good inaugural pick, so if you're with me, I'll put him on.
Go ahead.
All right, so that's number one.
Yes.
Your pick.
You know, when you were saying about Ric Flair... going hand in hand with something. I think a stable
mm-hmm.
that goes hand in hand with somebody is Shawn Michaels and the D-Generation X.
You know, Generation X always is a bad rap. Everybody calls them degenerates. D-Generation X, is that us? D-Generation X, Triple H, HBK, China, Ravishing Rick, we are D-Generation X. You make your rules and we will break them.
Yeah, you know what? DX was great.
Yes.
That was another thing that defined the later part of Shawn Michaels' first run.
Yes, and I think it's, again, it's Shawn was at a point in his career there where it was like he was coming off that really crappy face push.
Mm-hmm.
And like it was like he needed something, like he came back as a heel again.
Yep.
But it was like there was this something missing and he needed something extra. And it was like D-Generation X. And I felt that really like... That
yeah.
helped, you know, and
sure.
it helped a lot of people over time, I think, get over.
I think so, and I think they had a common goal. Their common goal was, you know, to hell with authority.
Yeah, it was to create chaos, basically.
Let's mess some stuff up.
Right.
Let's screw with the owner.
I think it's the most... There's another stable, which I'm sure we're going to talk about.
Sure.
But I feel like they're very associated with like the 90s, like more even like more so even than the like NWO, you would say, only because like DX, there's something about like the guys in it are literally from the Generation X, and like there's just something about it that's like this is this generation of guys, you know, and generation of wrestlers.
That's a good point.
Like,
whereas the NWO, who I was gonna say next anyway, so I guess we'll get to them in a sec, whereas the NWO was more about the violence and the taking over.
Right, and it was about older guys kind of saying, like, to hell with them trying to throw us out, right? It was like...
DX was like, we're young, we're brash, fuck you, basically. Yeah. We're breaking the rules. They weren't trying to take over the WWF.
They were trying to... It was almost
disrupt
more like...
Disrupt it.
Disrupt it, change it. Like, even, like, the language. Like, I always liked that about DX, that they acknowledged that, you know what, wrestling fans aren't... We're not, like, the most... We're not going to speak.
Couthful?
Yeah, couthful. That's probably, yeah. And that it's like, but it's more of like an acknowledgement of that and like an embrace. It's like, no, we're fun and we want to, you know, we want to kick some ass and like.
Sure. And it's the Howard Stern era, yeah. The South Park era at the time, yeah. Where dick jokes are funny. I mean, they're still kind of funny, but where dick jokes are really funny.
There will be less dick references.
Oh, shit.
Watch your fucking mouth.
Well, fuck me.
God damn it. Fuck.
But you know, that's the thing with DX, though. It's like, we're ass kickers, but we have fun while we're doing it. And that's like, right. I feel like that was the defining of that generation at the same time.
And now you're mainly talking about, I would assume, the initial DX, right?
Yeah, as far as the Shawn Michaels hookup. But I do really think that the second version helped put over the careers of Billy Gunn and Road Dogg.
And Sean Waltman.
And Sean Waltman, yeah.
Absolutely.
Because those guys were guys that were spinning their wheels. I mean, if you see, like, literally what the hell Jesse James was doing before this.
Yep.
It's like that guy was going nowhere.
And Billy Gunn, too.
Same thing. Billy Gunn was coming off a kind of a sort of successful tag team.
Like, yeah, mildly.
Mildly successful tag team, but there was really nowhere to go for him. And they tried.
And X-Pac was floundering in WCW.
Yeah.
You know, he was going to go nowhere.
It was just like, it was a big refresh for these guys.
Good point. I mean, okay, if we're going to put DX on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
The NWO, though, we have to talk about first,
right?
To be safe.
And
here.
Before we head away from DX, I don't want to miss out on China too. I think it
yes,
helped.
Of course.
China was just kind of there before.
Yeah, she punched Bart Gunn and people
yeah,
like
but,
that.
Like DX gave her an attitude and like she started to become sort of a fun character too later on.
Yeah, to an extent.
So it's like again, it's the transformative nature of what DX could do to people who they reached out and touched.
Okay, you know? Very fair. To the NWO we go for comparison.
Yeah.
Obviously, the initial non-bloated version of it
is awesome.
Amazing.
Now, that's probably the disruption that DX kind of spun off of.
Yes, definitely.
That the idea of Hall coming through the crowd is something that will never get old to me.
Me neither.
To me, if you were to make a stable now, that's how you should do it.
Ugh.
Like, I mean, it really defined, like, what this is. It's like, no, this is like, these guys are taking over this company, but, like, in a more forceful way, not, like, in a disruptive way, like, just brute force. It's like, oh, we're better than, this is garbage, WCW. Like, we're gonna just, it's like, we're from WWF, like, this is crap. Like,
baseball bats throwing people into trailers, you know, beating up Arn Anderson in the
like,
parking lot.
Two of them versus, like, you know, 60 of them.
Amazing,
like,
right?
With baseball bats, and they're like, they're just like, what do we do?
And then, of course, what it did for Hogan's later career.
Oh, my God. Honestly, to me, it's still kind of unbelievable to this day. If you look at, like, what Hulk Hogan was just not anything that the NWO was.
Not at all.
He was not cool in that darker sense.
No.
At all until the NWO.
Until the NWO, and he became one of the best heels of all time.
Did you, like, honestly, in 1995, did you think you'd ever say that Hulk Hogan was one of the best heels of all time? Like, did
nope.
you ever think that
nope.
would even enter your thought process?
Nope, I'll
and
be
that's
honest.
How freaking impactful the NWO was.
Absolutely. You know what? The reason that people to this day say things like Cena should turn heel or Roman Reigns should turn heel is because of that precedent.
Yes, everybody is pining for that Hogan heel moment.
Yep.
And I still feel like it has never been reached. Like, that is one
never.
It is one of the holy grails of wrestling that they still haven't been able to touch. You know what I mean? Like,
right on.
They tried it with Austin when he turned
at 17.
Vince and all
didn't
that.
Work.
It wasn't the holy grail that we had hoped
no
for.
No way.
And the Cena thing's just been lingering and lingering, and it's like, are they gonna do it? And it's like, I just. But you know what? You know why I always hold out hope?
Why?
Because the Hogan thing, I think that at the same time was something that people just never thought would happen. So it's like the fact that we're losing hope, it's almost like we're being lulled into something. Like, so I'm never going to say never on Cena turning. Like, I will never, until the day he retires, I honestly can't say. It could just happen tomorrow. Like, honestly, like,
yeah, you never know.
That's how Hogan felt. Like, it just happened out of nowhere.
You never know, Quinn. So with the NWO, obviously they had their low points, but they're, you know, meaning basically anything after like 97, 98.
I will say, if we were to define like who should be in the Rushmore of the NWO,
yeah,
it's the initial pre-Wolfpack black and white edition, that like initial NWO.
Paul Nash, Hogan.
I even like
DiBiase.
There was a certain element of, I did like initially the idea of this gang mentality.
I did too.
So there was something to be said about even the NWO that included the likes of like a Scott Norton or Buff Bagwell, just because, not that they're good,
yeah,
but just because it added to this gang mentality before that got played out.
That's fair, Quinn.
Even with the like Virgil and stuff like that being in it.
IRS.
Yeah.
You know what? And they also did this, lest we forget. You know, before WWF, they had the authority figure, the evil authority figure, Eric Bischoff.
That is true. And I think they never get any credit for that. Turning the authority figure bad was like the NWO actually did that first.
Yes, they did. And that was influential as well. So I say we put them on Mount Rushmore.
Yep.
If you're good with that. But I also think in the same breath, that DX should belong on there too.
I think, yeah, they're both defining enough.
So I say we do a double selection here.
Okay, yeah. Let's kill two spots.
All right, Quinn, so we have got three already. We have the NWO, we have DX, and we have the Four Horsemen. We need one more. Do you got one?
The Dangerous Alliance comes to mind.
They were good.
Yeah, just because it's like, I feel like that's Paulie's baby and it brought him to prominence. I like the idea of this remix of the Four Horsemen.
Essentially, yep,
yeah. Like
for the 90s.
Rick Rude and Bobby Eaton.
Medusa.
Steve Austin. On paper, it's a very cool, like,
yeah,
it's a very cool stable. Arn Anderson.
With a great manager.
Yeah, and crappy Larry Zbyszko. But they kicked him out pretty early.
Yeah,
so.
Screw Larry Zbyszko.
Yeah.
And, of course, managed by Paul E. I mean,
yeah, and just some really good heel work. And I really think, again, it was centered around Rick Rude.
It
and
was.
I like that because it's kind of a phantom thing. It's like Rick Rude is a cool person to center a faction around. And it's also neat the fact that Rick Rude was connected to DX later on down the line.
That's true, he was.
You know, it is a very, it's an awesome stable. And actually, I think it's kind of influential in a way, too, because if you look at the structure of it, it's sort of DX-y in a way, because Medusa is a woman that can kick ass.
Good point.
And like, Rick Rude is like, he's very Shawn Michaels in his character.
Kind of obnoxious.
Obnoxious.
Ladies man.
Yeah, exactly. So it's an interesting setup, and you got an enforcer in Arn Anderson. And
yeah, still being the enforcer, which is funny.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a cool one, and I also want to kind of compare it to another one, though. The Nation of Domination.
We are the Nation of Domination!
You think so, huh?
I really think the Nation...
Underrated?
Very underrated in there, because we've seen some of that early Nation stuff over again.
Yep.
And I don't think I really got what exactly was being put across. Like, Farouk was just a badass.
Great talker, too.
Great talker, and he made it feel real. Like, there was this real tension.
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't particularly like the Crush Savio version.
No, but I mean, it when it evolved into the Mark Henry, D'Lo,
comma,
The Rock, yeah, The Godfather.
Even that brief period where Ahmed turned heel and joined the Nation. Holy shit.
It got dark. Yeah, it got like...
That was good.
You know what's cool about it? It's whereas the Dangerous Alliance is more of a prototypical stable where it's got, you know, it's got this and it's got that, like,
yeah,
all the pieces. The Nation is this weird, like, conglomeration of just, like, you know, guys that are pissed, and they and they're not going to stand for this shit. Like, you know what I mean?
And I mean, that's where The Rock made a name for himself,
right? And it's got The Rock.
It had The Rock, and the 98 Nation, where they all had personalities. Finally, yeah. Was pretty fun.
Yeah,
with D'Lo and the Godfather.
It was
that
fun.
Version was
yeah,
fun.
It was cool, and they had a great feud with DX. And I got one more that I could throw in there.
Sure, go ahead.
The Hart Foundation.
The Stable.
As the Stable.
The New Hart Foundation.
The actual, like, I always think of them as the real Hart
so
Foundation.
So do I, but that's what they were initially called. Yeah. Oh my God, I forgot about them.
Yeah.
Bret Hart, Owen Hart, British Bulldog, Brian Pillman, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, anti-American, feuding with DX, feuding with Steve Austin.
Yes.
Oh man, you know what?
I'm glad we did it in that order, because I like... If you're going to compare those three,
yeah.
You got this prototypical one that's kind of a spinoff of the Horsemen, but they're also like a precursor to like a DX or something.
Fair.
You got the Nation, which is like, I like the Nation because they're like an abstract, like they're very they're radically different than most stables.
They were, yeah.
And you got the Hart Foundation, which is like a family first stable. Like it's a family stable. Like that's different too. Like,
that's true. And Canadian values. You know what I mean? Faces
international. Yeah.
Faces anywhere but the U.S.
Yeah.
If you look at the program that the Hart Foundation had against Shawn Michaels and DX and Steve Austin and that whole period of time in 97, that's some of the best programming that WWF has ever produced.
Right.
Let's be honest. And that's some of the best promo work that Bret Hart has ever done.
Yes. I mean, the formation of the Hart Foundation alone is a great moment.
Yeah, USA. You're talking about a country that's based its entire history on brother against brother. They got talk shows all over this country of families airing out their family problems because they all hate each other.
That whole angle... Mm-hmm. Is off the charts in how good it was.
And it's really good.
It was short-lived, but that doesn't mean it doesn't qualify.
No, I think it more than qualifies. I think it's one of them. It's very impactful, the Hart Foundation.
It's
very, like, memorable.
You know what I liked about it? There was never anyone turning on anyone in that.
No.
They never broke up. They only dissolved because of, you know, well, you
Montreal,
know,
yeah.
Pillman died in the Montreal, but there was never dissension. It wasn't Russified.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were a united force. They're better than the Nation.
Yeah, I think they're better than the Nation, but are they better than the Dangerous Alliance?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
I can concede that, because I love the Dangerous Alliance a lot, but I really feel like the Dangerous Alliance, I think they're like under the radar good. Like,
yes.
Nobody really remembers them, but like if you really look back to the programs and stuff they were doing, it's great stuff. It really is.
But the Hart Foundation.
But the Hart Foundation is more like,
they're on
impactful.
The radar. Yeah. They mattered.
Yeah.
I think they're number four.
Yeah.
You with me?
Yeah, I'm with
you. All right, let's put them on. All right, folks. So we have our four on Mount Rushmore. That would be the Four Horsemen. That would be DX, the NWO, and the Hart Foundation. We want to know what you guys think. Let us know. You can tweet at us at OVP Podcast. You can email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. And of course, Quinn,
OVPPodcast.com, where you can get all the links.
All of the links.
They're all there.
So I guess, Quinn, it is now time to move on to the worst of the worst.
Okay. Well, I think I'll start with one that I just absolutely detest.
Okay.
Short-lived.
Okay.
I just think it's stupid.
All right.
I don't like it.
What is it?
The Union.
What's your problem with the Union?
It's so dumb.
Why?
Like, first of all, Vince McMahon without like a jacket on and like
that's the problem
rolling
with
up his sleeves like he's a working man all of a sudden. Like, and he got guys with like it might as well be called the Jim Duggan Foundation or something. Like, it's just weird, and they never accomplished diddly shit.
That's
like,
true.
Like,
that's
nothing.
A good point.
Like,
yeah.
What was that? Like,
who was in that? Mankind, Ken Shamrock, Big Show, and McMahon?
Yeah.
Was there another
like
guy?
Vince McMahon got like
Matt
ousted
Shane.
Or
yeah.
something from the corporation. And then I think it just turned around, like the higher power like overrode it or something. Like, I don't know what happened. Like,
oh God. Well, we'll have to come back to that. Speaking of higher power.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw one at you.
Yeah.
The corporate ministry.
Oof.
From 99.
Yeah.
The merger of the corporation and the ministry, where you had like 19 people in this piece of crap.
I mean, was it more people than the NWO at any time?
I don't know. It's close.
Is that possible?
The Acolytes, Edge and Christian, Gangrel, Big Boss Man.
That's so weird.
Big Show, Shane, Vince, Gerald Briscoe.
Yeah.
Pat Patterson, Undertaker, Midian, Viscera.
It's kind of amazing that the union and that were all around the same time.
Yeah, Vince Russo is the reason for that, Quinn.
It's just very mishandled.
Corporate ministry, bloated.
I do think the initial, like, revealing, I guess, with Vince with the robe and all that.
Oh, that sucked.
Oh, you didn't like that?
Horrible.
I didn't really expect it, honestly.
Horrible.
Yeah, I guess.
Terrible.
But you know what? I have to raise that.
Okay.
The Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah, you might have a winner on your hands there,
yeah,
Quinn.
Yeah, the Dungeon of Doom.
First of all, why?
Well, okay, so I guess the concept is this.
Don't try it.
If there is a concept. The concept is, let's take all the stupid villains that Hulk Hogan fought in the 1980s and put them in this big, like, glob of people, and then, like, sometimes they're with the Four Horsemen, like, for no reason, and, like, they have some uneasy alliance with, like, Kevin Sullivan and Arn Anderson.
Sullivan was in the Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah, but Sullivan was, like, the leader, right? But
the,
like,
Taskmaster.
Do you remember... The task, yes, the task, and he had the master
Curtis Iaukea.
Yeah,
right.
But he kind of like went away, like, yes, faded into his own glob of fat and never came back, like in the mist on that island or wherever he was.
Now, Kamala was in the Dungeon of Doom, right?
Yeah, and the Zodiac.
Oh God, Ed Leslie.
Yeah.
Oh, and
well, most notably the Yeti.
We talked about him last week.
Also,
Loch Ness,
Giant Haystacks. Yes. And what was Earthquake?
The shark.
Like, everything was junk. Like,
you're right.
And
Hugh Morris.
I feel like the here's this big piece of shit, right? And then they said, how can we make an even taller, bigger, gigantic piece of shit to, like, make this, like, settle in that, like, this is, like, the epic finale of this?
Yep.
And it's that triple-decker, maybe it was quadruple-decker
triple cage. Yeah.
And then, like... And, like, it was so weird because there was, like, this strange, like, one cage had, like, a piece of the Four Horsemen. And then there's, like, this other part with, like, Lex Luger
yeah,
for some reason.
Yeah, why did he, like, have a problem?
Because I don't think... Remember when he came in?
Oh, yeah,
he was
white,
like,
shirt.
He was, like, shady or something.
With his white shirt,
yeah,
on.
Yeah, but, like, Sting wasn't with him for that part. And Jimmy Hart managed Lex... It was so weird. And remember Jimmy Hart joined the Dungeon of Doom?
Yes, and the giant.
And Hulk Hogan didn't have a mustache. Remember that?
Yes. When you're feuding with Kevin Sullivan, you got problems in 95.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I'm just rattling off things.
Kevin Sullivan!
Remember when Kevin Sullivan was dressed like a woman in the
yes.
crowd and he attacked Hulk Hogan? I think that's when they shaved his mustache off, actually.
Now, was Big Bubba in the Dungeon of Doom?
Yes.
Why?
Yeah. Because he fought Hulk Hogan, I guess.
Zeus, that one time?
Z-Gangster.
Yes.
Yes. Sorry, they had to change that.
You know what, Quinn? Is any further discussion needed on this, or can we just put
it's
it in?
It's so wildly ridiculous.
You know what? It's one of the worst. Is it fun?
Kind
yeah.
of. Sort of. Not really, though. It really, like, if you lived through it, I felt like it ran its course, like, very quickly.
You know what? You're right. I actually didn't like it at the time.
But looking back, it's, like, really funny. But
it's funny, but it really isn't good.
No, it just doesn't belong.
Funny doesn't make it good, right?
Yeah.
All right, so you know what?
Yeah.
You want to throw it into the
yes.
desert? The Desert of Doom. Here it goes.
Die, die, die.
All right, good. That's out of the way.
Yeah.
So you gave me that one, right?
Yeah.
So it's my pick?
Yep.
Do you remember Three Count?
Yeah.
In 99 WCW? Yep.
They were like the Backstreet Boys.
Yes.
Do you count them really as a faction, I guess?
It's three guys, right?
I mean, it's three enough.
Evan Courageous. Who was it? Evan Courageous, Shannon Moore, and...
somebody.
Gregory Helms. Shane Helms.
Yeah. Sugar Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why was there a boy band group?
I just don't understand why they were like a threat ever. They seem kind of a joke.
They were a joke stable. Maybe that doesn't make them the worst.
Yeah, I mean, but there was one that really got on my nerves that I'm thinking of right now. And it's more recent. The Nexus.
Oh, you know what? That's a great one because they were a bunch of idiots.
It was just junk. Like,
always.
Okay, so their leader is Wade Barrett.
Without the beard, I always point out. He looked stupid without the beard.
Yes, and I know Barrett. Some people are going to be like, CM Punk took over and made it better, but it was like, it sucked. Like, it sucked. Still sucked. Like, I always get upset that CM Punk even had to represent that garbage. Like,
that was bad. Who was in that? Alex Riley,
like,
was he in that?
McGillicuddy. Yeah. And like, God. Just anybody who like didn't work out from like NXT TV show, and like, it just sucked.
The Nexus was bad. You know what else was really bad?
What?
Do you remember The Legacy?
Oh, yeah, Manu. That's all I think of when I think of The Legacy.
Remember, like, Deuce was in it too, or Domino, or one of them?
Wait,
Sim Snuka.
Wait, did they convert him by that? Oh,
yes!
God!
And then Cody Rhodes?
Yeah, well, it was mainly headlined by Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes,
and
Ted
DiBiase
Jr.
But then they also had, like, Manu and Sim Snuka.
What?
I know, like, Randy Orton is pretty good, but, like, that stable was a giant piece of crap.
Yeah,
that's
really
like
sucked.
That was, I remember you and I were watching
but
Raw.
But is it worse than the Nexus, though?
I don't know. We didn't care about Legacy. We knew it was bad at the time.
Yeah, but I mean, at least it had some guys in it. Like, I feel like the Nexus Form 1, like the version 1 of it.
Yeah.
Like, that is some junk. Like,
it is.
Like,
it
that is.
Is
some real junk. And you know who I think of them hand in hand with? The New Blood.
I was going to say next, the New Blood, as much as I tried to defend the purpose of them, the purpose.
Listen, we watched.
Yes,
that,
I know.
And
that was horrible.
They stink. Like, they just stunk.
They did.
I know you don't like the Millionaires Club, but at least they were like something.
At least Hogan and Flair were.
Yeah,
in it.
Like, at least they could like defend themselves. The New Blood was just a bunch of goons. Like, why is Rey Mysterio in this thing with no mask?
Yo, homes.
Yeah, it's just, and Kidman's like your best guy, I guess.
Kidman!
And then somehow Big Papa Pump is in this.
Remember, like, and he's like, you guys stink. Even
he
knew.
Yeah, even he knew it stunk. I think that just goes on just because the people in it are like saying it stinks.
You know what?
Yeah.
After watching that Thunder last week.
Yeah.
I have no defense for that stable.
Yeah.
It goes in.
Die, die, die.
I got another one.
Okay, what do you got?
How about the LWO?
Okay, well, to be fair, that was more of like a joke.
I guess. I mean, what about NWO 2000?
No, because the people in it, if you really think about it, like Bret Hart, Scott Steiner,
but,
Jeff Jarrett.
Okay, the leader is Jeff Jarrett.
No, Bret
That's
Hart.
That's the problem.
Bret Hart was the original leader.
Yeah, but it became
then
Jeff Jarrett.
Then like, Goldberg, you know, had kicked his head
whatever.
Off.
Sent him to Italy.
Oh, you know, I don't harbor any animosity, you know, towards Bill Goldberg and the WCW.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The NWO 2000 was bad, but what about the NWO B team? Do you count that? That was pretty crappy.
Were you just talking about just the NWO that was like with the music? It's like ding, ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding, ding. Yeah, the one that was led by like Stevie Ray or some shit.
Oh, when they were like an actual separate entity?
Yes.
I thought you were just talking about like the B squad.
No, the B team.
Okay.
That was pretty bad. What about Masterpiece No Limit Soldiers?
You know what? I barely remember them.
They were horrible. What about James Vandenberg's Creature Fest? The Oddities. The Oddities, yeah. Quinn.
Well, okay, I can one up even the Oddities.
Okay.
The Job Squad.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was bad.
Yeah, they were so bad, I don't think they ever accomplished a damn thing.
Al Snow, Bob Holly, and Scorpio.
Yeah, horrible.
Horrible.
Yeah, a Job Squad.
Truth Commission.
Oh, wow, we're really naming them off now.
We gotta start
collecting some of these, but
I know.
The Truth Commission is dog shit.
That was
You know
bad.
What's even worse, though? The one that's like the first version with that weird guy.
The Commandant?
Yeah. Does anybody even know that guy's real name?
No. No one does. Bret Hart does.
Okay.
Bret Hart got him the job.
I am a Commandant, the commanding officer of the Truth Commission from South Africa.
He met him in South Africa, and he's like,
you know, you're an actor. You want to do this gimmick?
The Commandant!
What was that?
Yeah. I don't know! Was Kurgan even in it at that point? Okay. Yeah. They're in.
They're in.
Like,
Truth
no
Commission,
doubt about it. I agree. Like,
that's number three?
Truth Commission stinks.
There they go!
Die, die, die!
So we've got three already, Quinn. This was easier than I thought.
Yeah, well, there was like a plethora so far. But you know what? I think I found one.
Okay, what do we got?
the right to censor.
Game over.
Yep.
I don't think we can find worse.
I mean, did they ever do anything? Like, I remember just Ivory, like, lost wrestling in a dress at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And, like Stevie Richards is the leader.
The right to censor has fought to help this program be raised from the sewers of filth and profanity.
The leader.
The leader and the good father.
The good father and Val Venus, but not Val Venus.
And the Truth Commission's own Bull Buchanan.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Yeah.
That was bad. You know what?
Wait a sec. Was Bull Buchanan in the...
Yeah, he was like recon or sniper or something.
Yeah, he was in the Truth Commission.
He was one of them.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know who the other one was, but he was recon or one of them. It doesn't matter which one. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think... You know what's funny... Talking about this, I think the Truth Commission is like the worst of the worst, possibly. But like, it's just funny that the guys from that like leak into some of the others that might be on this list.
Right to censor.
Right to censor.
Oh god! And to top it all off, their theme.
Oh. Oh. To sound like a car alarm going off.
You know, all that stable was Vince mad at the PTC. For, like, trying to censor the WWF. So he's like, oh, we're the right to censor now,
so
pal.
He made me listen to that annoying music for months.
Yep.
Like, 6 months. I was glad when they, like, got their asses whooped at WrestleMania. Like,
yeah.
Like, that was great.
Vince McMahon, this is the type of guy he is. He will use a tiny little personal grudge there to kill the career of Val Venus.
Or Morley, or whatever his name
Sean
is.
Sean Morley.
Yeah.
Wow. Right to censor.
Yeah, they gotta be. Like, I think they're the last of this. Can you think of anyone, like, worse?
On that big of a stage?
Yeah.
No. I don't think I can.
Be in, like, WCW, ECW.
The worst I can think of from WCW is probably the Dungeon of Doom. The No Limit Soldiers were bad, but whatever. God, you know what, Quinn? I think you hit upon it.
Yeah,
I think you hit upon it with the right to censor. If you're game, I'm game.
I'm game.
All right.
Die, die, die.
So, folks, we've done it. We have a Rushmore and a Death Valley of the best and worst stables, factions, whatever you want to call them. But, of course, we want you to call us on the Twitter at OBP Podcast. Let us know.
Tell us what you think.
Tell us what you think. You can also go to our website, OVPPodcast.com. All the links, Quinn. And, of course, you can chat and leave comments.
Yeah, leave comments right on the website.
Right on the website. Folks, we are going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we are reviewing something. Back after this.
Now, The Rock says... What makes you think that you jabronis actually have the right to tell somebody what to say and what not to say?
Yeah. Good question, Rock. Amen, you jabronis.
Have the right to tell somebody what to do and what not to do. Have the right to tell somebody what to hear and what not to hear.
You can't tell me how to run my business and what people want to see, because if they wanted to see your kind of rustling you're talking about, that's what we would have out there.
You're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, the fastest growing weekly episodic retro wrestling audio podcast in the world.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, episode number 28. Glad to have you with us. It's Monday, April 24th. You know, Quinn, we're reviewing something.
Are we?
Oh, yeah, we are.
It's something, all right.
It is.
I feel like I always say that.
But you know what? This is especially interesting.
Yes, it is.
We, first of all, I have to give props here to Richard Bland. This is where we got
this. Especially on this one, because...
This is by request of me.
Yeah. This is a weird one.
I asked Richard... You can check him out on YouTube, Richard Bland. You probably know who he is if you know who we are. But if not, he's got great freaking... content all over the place from like 80s, 90s WWF. Mm-hmm. And this guy seemingly can get like anything.
I don't even understand.
I don't get it.
Like where is this stuff sitting?
He's a nice English fellow.
Yep.
And I was like, hey, Richard, do you have any access to WWF Blast Off? And he's like, sure, mate. And that's not what he said, but so he found it. He uploads it like a day later somehow.
He just was like, of course. I feel like Richard said something to the effect of like
no shit.
Yeah, no shit. Of course I have this kind of thing. Like, it's like you think too little of me or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, like of course I have Blast Off, like, sitting on a tape in somewhere.
And he did. And I guess we need to explain what what Blastoff. First of all, who reviews Blastoff?
Yeah,
what are we doing?
We must be like the first people in the history of the internet to review WWF Blastoff.
We might be,
yeah,
because if you look it up, folks, there's not much about it.
Wikipedia really doesn't understand what the show is.
Here's the thing: in September of '96, Quinn.
Yeah.
WWF kind of revamped their lineup, and a couple of the changes they made, and you might remember this from personal experience at the time, is they got rid of Mania.
Yes, more Mania.
Right, which was Saturdays at 10 a.m. on USA.
Right.
What they put in its place was the show that we reviewed a couple of weeks ago, Livewire.
Right.
So that took over the 10 o'clock Saturday morning time slot.
Mm-hmm.
Amongst the other changes is they put Superstars on USA on Sunday mornings. That was one of the things. But in the midst of all this, for a very short amount of time, and I don't know why, not on USA, but on the superstation WGN,
yep,
they decided, let's do a show just like Mania. Let's air it at 9 in the morning on Saturday.
Well, because you got to blast off in the morning.
And let's call it WWF Blast Off, and let's have Todd Pettengill host it now.
This is where it gets interesting, I feel.
There's a few things that get interesting here. Wikipedia says that Mania ended and was rebranded as Blastoff.
Mm-hmm.
But Quinn, you and I note that's not true.
Yeah, because there's a part in this where he's not in like the Mania, like the normal place. And my thinking behind this is because they were filming Livewire in that spot. They just made it look, they put a bunch of computers everywhere and shit. And like
use a different camera angle.
Yeah, use a different camera angle. And all of a sudden, it's not the Pettengill room anymore.
Right. So, first of all, with Mania, they were in the edit room of WWF. This is not in the WWF edit room. And we'll get to where it is in 1 second. But first and foremost, this is not a clone of Mania.
No.
It is not a rebranding of Mania.
I mean, it's a glorified recap show, right?
It's essentially Mania.
Yeah.
But it's not Mania.
What the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah.
And that's the point I wanted to make. So anyway, we get a NASA-inspired negative image intro, Quinn.
Now, the date on this is 12/7/96, so we're just before In Your House, It's Time.
Thank you very much. This is 12/7/96. This is actually one of your favorite new eras, Quinn, the pre-Attitude Attitude era.
Yeah, I've gotten into this lately, and regardless of what Scotty says about this pay-per-view coming up,
yeah,
I disagree that it is awesome.
It's Time is awesome. Quinn and I, you and I actually watched that together when you first got the network.
Yes, I love that pay-per-view. It's
me
so
too.
Dumb that it's fun.
It's fun.
It's
I don't care.
It's not a bad pay-per-view.
If all you care about, folks, is, how many stars did that match get?
Yeah.
Well, then you're not going to like it.
Yeah.
But if you just like want to appreciate the ridiculousness of it and the fun of it, it's great.
Basically, I akin that pay-per-view to like, it's basically like Steve Austin just running roughshod over all the dumbasses that are still left over from the stupid times.
Well said. So we get this weird intro, Quinn, and you had a great quote. You said this is them being like, hey, we don't know what's cool
yet. Yeah, like I almost like said to you that this is almost like you know how like Nickelodeon and like Pete and Pete and like that kind of crap? Like, you know, negative colors and like, you know, old stock footage. Like that's this.
Yep. So we are hosted by Todd Pettengill.
Well, the Toddster. Yes.
Don't, he calls
he
himself
never,
that.
Ever doesn't say the Toddster the whole show.
You're right.
The Toddster.
And Quinn, where are we hosting from?
The WPLJ studio.
Yes.
Like, this is where Todd works his day job.
Yes.
Like, right? And like, I told you, I was like, I bet you literally what happened here is they were filming Livewire. And they said, Todd, we can't use the same thing, right? So, because they're busy, it's set up for that,
yeah,
basically,
right?
And so Todd said, you know what, come to my office, and we'll just film it there. Because literally, like, nothing has changed. Nothing has moved around. It's just the PLJ room.
It is.
Like, even the banners in the background and all this crap.
And he says it's where they're from. Like, we're not guessing. He actually
says. He makes no bones about it. We're in the PLJ, like, edit room, I guess.
Yeah. So,
like, tape decks in the background and, like, really old oscillators and a bunch of wood crap.
Yes, there's a bunch of wood. So, Todd, the Toddster, is in rare form this morning.
Oh, he is insane,
I would
say.
He's got a doofy blue sweater thing on.
Yeah, like Native American print. but a cardigan.
And then he's like, look at my slicked back hair. I've got a Pat Riley look going on.
And I just want to be like, how dated can this be? Like, Pat Riley, he's talking about Pat Riley now.
At the time, the coach of the Knicks.
And I just say he looks like an idiot.
He did.
Time for the Todster to slick his hair back. Got the Pat Riley look going today.
He's just being ultra ridiculous. He says Flash Funk is going to get funky.
Funky. And it like actually like says it on the screen.
Yeah, funky.
And it's showing like weird like clips, almost like you know, like that camera view when they're like, it's almost like how when they show a bomb dropping, like, you know, like the crosshairs, yes. Like on like that.
But because they're blasting off, Gwen.
Yeah, because and it's showing like wrestlers doing stuff as Todd's the Todster, is going through everything.
Then he does a horrible British accent while talking about London.
He's telling us what happened in London last week or 10 days ago, yeah. I want to say, he says.
Stone Cold Steve Austin, Psycho Sid, the Bulldog, the Ip Man.
And then this is great because this is 1996, so of course, why not do a Wayne Campbell impression?
Yeah, he just, out of the blue, like, just, he's just talking, and then he decides to be Wayne Campbell for, like literally 0.2 seconds. Like, he says two words, like, as Wayne Campbell, and then just continues his sentence.
He's clearly being Wayne Campbell.
Yeah, okay.
And Quinn, you're like, there's way too much going on here.
Yeah, it's like every 90s trope possible, like,
the
wrapped up
Jerry
in one.
Cup,
yeah, like,
Todd's sweater, Pat Riley.
Yeah.
The Wood Studio, PLJ.
Wayne's World. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So we finally get something going. We go to Raw.
Yeah, Double J, Jesse Jammies versus Big Bully Bradshaw. Like, I never realized they spelled his name like that. That is awful.
Why there's two M's? Yeah, I don't know what that is.
That makes it look like it's literally pronounced Jammies.
And it's not how it's really spelled either. It's just James.
Yeah. They Jesse say James.
Yeah,
it's but it's James. Double Day Jesse Jammies.
Against Big Bully Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
You know that big bully that we all know is still employed by... Both of these guys are still employed by this company.
So, of course, Double J, Jesse Jammies, sings the song that we all love.
Spend my day working hard on the go, but the hands on the clock keep spinning.
Okay. So Vince and King are on commentary, of course, because it's Raw.
He is bad in this, by the way.
We'll get to that, because he's really bad. The crowd, I just need to say, is dead. You notice that, Quinn?
What are we at, hour number 73 of this filming?
Whatever taping this was. And then, Quinn, you have a great quote. This match sucks. Bradshaw is a piece of shit. How was this guy WWF champion at one point?
I don't get it. This guy doesn't have any like star material written on him.
No, he's just big.
He's just big and he's just there.
It's just clear that Vince just always liked him because he's putting him over huge in this match.
Yeah, like he's some big superstar and he's got the guy, he's got Uncle Zeb with him and he's got the, what is that thing?
The branding iron?
The branding iron. Yeah, it's just a stamp.
That's awful. Like, Zed actually does wind up interfering for a little bit, and then, but he just, like, touches, like, Double J's head, and Quinn...
I was like, at this point, I'm like, why wouldn't he just use the branding iron that he's been carrying around the whole match and just, you know, sear his eyes out or whatever? Which, by the way, none of that makes sense, because branding iron, you need, like, hot coals or some heat source, so he just carries around, essentially, a stick that is, like, a stamp on the end of it, like...
It might as well say paid or faxed on it, you know?
It's really dumb. And they act like it's hurting them or something, you know?
I don't get it.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Now, this was weird. Even though this crowd was dead the whole entire match, and believe me, folks, this is a very bad match. It really is.
Oh, there was like no comment the whole time.
Yeah, we were just like,
what are we watching?
Yeah.
Like,
why did they replay this? But anyway, the crowd actually pops for like a regular vertical suplex by Double J. I swear.
Well, good for them, I guess. I said either of these guys could win this match. They're both that useless.
Yeah, because we were like, who's going to win? And Quinn's like...
You were very sure Justin the Hawk Bradshaw was going to win. And I said, are you sure? Because, like, literally, these guys are at the exact same level. Anybody could win.
Speaking of Bradshaw, though, Quinn, you said to me, you're like, why was he Justin Hawk Bradshaw and not Justin the Hawk?
I hate whenever they do this. Like, Justin Hawk Bradshaw, like, why is he, where's the, like, he's the Hawk, you're not just Justin Hawk Bradshaw. That's so stupid.
Well, he was the Hawk,
but he wasn't the Hawk.
He was
Justin
Hawk.
Hawk, he wasn't the Hawk, he was just Hawk. What? It always bothered me too when they would announce Bret Hart as Bret Hitman Hart rather than Bret the Hitman Hart.
I don't know. I mean,
but they revolve too. They would say it like
Finkel said Bret Hitman.
He would say that, but then
every other announcer said Bret the Hitman.
Yeah.
Mike McGurk, Mel Phillips.
He's
Bill
the Hitman.
Dunn.
He's not Hitman.
Well, Thomas Hitman Hearns is where he took the name from.
Well, I don't care. That sounds stupid.
Randy the Macho Man Savage or Randy Macho Man Savage?
That one's different.
During something important, folks, during this match, I don't know what it was because the camera cuts away to a view from like the fucking ceiling.
Yeah.
What was,
there was
that?
Something they go out to the outside to like fight or something. So the cameraman decides, you know what, I'm gonna go to that cool ceiling view I have now.
Like, you know, like in the Royal Rumble video game for SNES where yeah. it shows like the arena.
And the
shot?
Ring's like a dot.
Yeah,
in
that's
the,
what it was. Yeah. Why cut to that? Yeah. Anyway, so Zeb interferes again. Lariat gets the win for Hawk, and Quint, you're like, hey, couldn't even beat him clean.
He couldn't beat him even clean. It's Jesse Jammies. Like, really? The Hawk can't get that, or I'm sorry, Hawk can't get that done. It's another thing. You call him Justin Hawk Bradshaw. What about, is he related to Hawk from Legion of Doom?
Well,
if he was the Hawk, it would be a difference,
right.
though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And then we do get that fake branding iron that you were talking about.
Stupid.
Tattoo.
This is great.
Yeah. Todd, we go back to Todd, and he's yelling about the match.
He's so upset.
He's so mad.
Uncle Zebekiah, Yosemite Sam look alike. Get in there and fight him, boy!
Then
this is
we get a quick promo. Now this I want you to explain it, Quinn, but I'll just say what the match is, but yeah. Please explain the logic. We get a promo for a handicap match next week. That's right. Jesse Jammies has challenged JBL and Uncle Zeb.
Okay.
For a handicap match.
This is, I have such a big problem with this. You just lost a match because he interfered.
Right.
So the way you decide to resolve this is, you know what? Instead of you like having to sneak around to interfere, no, just be in the match and then you both can attack me at the same time. What the hell? Like, what the hell, Jammies? Like, how do you not, like, understand, like, how a fight works? You're a professional freaking wrestler. It's ridiculous.
You're right. I agree.
See, I'm going to invite him in. And say, I could have, like, a steel cage match or something so that he can't get in.
Or lock him in a cage.
Or, yeah, put him in the bird cage or whatever above the ring.
But no, let's fight them both. Wouldn't he just lose anyway?
Yeah, screw you, Jammies. You're an idiot. You deserve to lose.
Go be with your baby tonight.
Yeah.
We get more British accent from Todd. And then, because it's in the 90s.
I can't even. What?
A Bill Cosby dance and impression.
Yeah, like the Jello kind impression. Yeah. Like,
and the thing with the button thing.
Yeah, he's doing that thing like he's like Mr. Cool or something.
He was a revolutionary.
Yeah.
Gonna do my Bill Cosby.
Then send me a coke and a smile, you see.
Ready for Flash Funk versus the Goon? Because that's what we're getting.
Well, I have to say, this is a historic first appearance for the Goon on our podcast. We've always talked about him like he's been in the peripheral, but like now he's like in a match that we're reviewing.
That's true. So for a guy, let's say like Donnie, who might not know who this is, the Goon was a hockey player wrestler.
Yeah, and he had like fake ice skates on.
And a jersey and everything. Yeah. And he was a really crappy brawler named Bill Irwin.
Yeah, he was just junk.
He was in the Desperados, right? In WCW?
He was part of that four guys.
Dead-Eyed Dick and Black Bart and all
that. No, but part of the four guys that came in with Cornette.
Yeah, T.L. Hopper.
Yeah.
And Sal Sincere.
The Pug.
And the Pug.
Yeah.
So as Flash comes down and he's dancing with the Funkettes.
Oh, this is weird.
Yeah, so Flash is doing his usual. Then we just cut to Todd in the studio in black and white for
and
no
with
reason.
With the music, like, they're putting this, like, over Flash Funk's entrance. Like, he's walking to the ring. You can hear his music. And it's a clip of Todd dancing with his Toddettes.
The Toddettes, he calls them. In black and white, too, for no reason.
And like that weird, like, every other frame, like, slow-mo style.
Yeah, it made no sense.
And like, the Toddettes are literally, like, you can tell, just like interns or
something.
Oh,
hell yeah. They don't
and
even
not
know.
Not even interns that work for WWF. I
PLJ
bet
PLJ, interns.
They're probably PLJ interns.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
That's like the worst you can get.
It's pretty bad.
Have you ever listened to PLJ? It's terrible.
Yeah, it's awful.
He's not good there. I'm sorry.
No.
He's better better on WWF.
He should have kept his night job.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Because you ever listen to that show that he used to host, or he still does, but not
the
with
the Z Mornings. No, not the
No. The Big Show.
The Big Show, sorry. John and Todd's Big Show
on PLJ. The Big Show.
Well, yeah. The Big Show.
It used to be with Scott and Todd, and now it's like Todd and Jada.
Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah, really. Yeah. So as Flash is doing like a 450, this is a good move.
Yeah.
In 96, Flash Funk is doing a 450, a backwards 450.
Which is very rare.
From the top turnbuckle to the outside.
Yes.
So that's the perfect time to cut away to the roof cam.
Yes, they do. It's like, you know that 450? We don't need to see that. Let's look at the whole crowd like it's Royal Rumble on 92 for NES or Super Nintendo or whatever.
Quinn, you also mentioned that Goon's haircut is like yours from 8th grade.
Yeah, it's basically like your typical 90s kid haircut.
Big fluffy mushroom cut.
Yeah, exactly. Short on the bottom, fluffy on the top. Yep.
I remember that hair. Goon gets some great offense, a punch.
Yeah.
Suplex.
He does get a suplex. I was surprised. I've never really seen the Goon do many moves. So
a suplex. I want the Goon to win. I'm not gonna lie.
Me too. Flash Funk stinks in his mustard whatever
jumpsuit.
You know, I always said he stunk when he was like the full body suit, but then
shirt,
when he took the shirt off but just had the Flash Funk pants and boots, he was better.
Sometimes the shirt can make the difference. Randy Savage?
Yeah, exactly. It's
better
true.
Without a shirt.
It's true.
Okay, it's fair.
Yeah.
So we cut to an annoying clip of Shawn Michaels waving. Like,
in like a referee shirt or something.
Yeah, waiting for his interview. He's like, hey, it's Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
By the way, Vince McMahon informs us there's a tribute to the recently deceased Tiny Tim coming soon.
Oh, no.
King, because of that one little minor incident he had with Tiny Tim in like 93... decides to just keep making fun of and laughing about the fact that Tiny Tim is dead.
I'm not my usual jovial self. I'm grief-stricken over the fact that Tiny Tim had kicked the bucket, McMahon.
He's doing this not only here.
Every match.
Now, first of all, he does it here, and then Vince almost has to, like convince him to stop.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, no, this isn't okay. Like, he's like, shut. Basically, he doesn't say it, but you can almost tell that even off camera, he's like, shut the hell up. Like, stop it. And then, but down like later in the show, he's still doing it.
Yeah, it gets worse.
Yeah.
So Flash misses a moonsault, and Quinn, you pose the big question to me. Can the Goon win?
I was, for one second, like, oh my god, did we find the episode of Blast Off where the Goon wins? Unbelievable.
So Funk wins with, like, I guess a botched 450. There's a leg drop or something involved in this.
He kind of makes it look okay. It's like he basically hits the leg. I think what happened, Joe, is it looked botched, but I'm pretty sure he landed it because he used to also do the one where he landed, like, did the leg drop.
Oh, he did?
He did do that.
Well, then he didn't botch it and he just won.
Yeah, it was just the camera angle made it. It was like from the wrong side or something. Yeah.
But yeah, the camera work on that Raw was really weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, we go back to Todd without the Toddettes, and just so you know, because this is very important, Quinn, at In Your House It's Time, Flash Funk will take on Leaf Cassidy.
Yeah, and Todd acts like it's going to be this, like, really great encounter. It's like, this is probably, like, the opening match or
it
something.
It is.
Yeah.
I remember it being the opener.
Yeah.
So then we get that Shawn Michaels interview that we were talking about, and he's got, like you said, Quinn, this awful striped, like, referee shirt.
Well, striped in, like, wait, is it the other... No, it's like basically a referee shirt.
It is, and it's like, but it's like green, dark green stripes, dark red.
Yeah, well,
red.
He's also wearing, like, you know when you wear an undershirt, you're supposed to wear like a color that doesn't see through, like white? He's got like a dark green, like, just like undershirt on underneath, like, and his collar's open, so like it really, he just looks stupid.
Yeah, this interview is junky. Even you, Quinn, the biggest Shawn Michaels fan, you even said to me that you don't like this version of him.
No, I hate this version of him because he's like, I'm not afraid of what people think, kids, like, you know, like it's like, be yourself.
It's one
and
of
like
those.
It's like, this is like not the Shawn Michaels character at all.
Yeah, the Shawn, like, Michaels character that you and I both really liked was the assholic version.
Yeah, it's not like he tries to defend himself for being different,
right?
Like, he just is different and he's a jerk and he doesn't care. He doesn't like announce that he doesn't care,
right?
Like,
exactly.
That's stupid.
I got long hair, got tattoos, got my belly pierced. Certain guys they don't like.
So he does that blah 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 interview, and then this was awesome, and not probably for a good reason.
This is pretty good, actually.
We go back to like this close up of Todd at the PLJ studio, and he defends.
All serious.
He is defending Shawn Michaels in this lengthy, lengthy monologue. Like, I mean, 3 minutes.
This is like Mean Gene on All American.
Yes.
Like, this monologue, it's like they had decided Todd's going to be this, like, this voice of a generation or something, and he's going to tell us that, like, Shawn Michaels is such a, he defends the title all the time. He's better than Bret Hart is now.
Yeah,
like,
he does, like, charities and fundraisers. He's so good. Like, shut up.
I was, like, amazed by this. And doesn't he have, like, another monologue later about something
else? Which is really good.
Yeah.
So then we get something. This is the best part of the show. Starting right now, this is where the show gets good. Because, first of all, we get a clip of Brett and Owen. Yeah, Brett and Owen two weeks ago on Raw.
With the short boy hair. Like, Owen just looks so goofy.
Instead of that drippy, wet hair that he had in 94 and 5. So, whatever match I guess they had on Raw a couple of weeks ago. Then Austin storms in and beats up Brett until the Bulldog makes the save.
Yeah, weird.
Really weird. Bulldog's a heel, obviously, teaming with Owen. I love that angle, by the way. That whole angle, the whole way it played out, we actually alluded a little bit to it with the Hart Foundation.
Right. I mean, this is kind of the start of it.
This is the seeds are being planted here. Mm. So then we get another clip of the Bulldog brawling with Austin and then Sid from London.
Yeah, now we're in England.
Then Brett saves Bulldog from a powerbomb from Sid.
Now, also, just to note, doesn't Brett have some weird, like, red variation of his... pink.
His attire's, like, red or something? Yeah. I don't know. Then Austin attacks Brett from behind. Remember that, Quinn? He just knees him in the back?
Yeah, it's so weird because I was, like, looking at my phone, like, briefly. You're like, he just attacked him. I'm like, wait, what? Like, I looked down for, like, less than a second.
And Austin knees Brett in the back
and runs away.
Yep. So then Sid chokeslams Brett. This whole thing was a scene, and it was all filmed on, like, one handheld camera in
London.
England.
Yeah.
Yep. Then we get backstage promos from England.
With the, like, foggy cam or whatever, like, the handheld.
So Austin bitches about everybody. Sid, Bulldog, Owen, Brett.
It's chaos, man. Everybody wants to get involved in Steve Austin's action.
Then Bulldog bitches about everybody, and Owen calms him down.
Yeah, he's like, we're tag champs, and we just have to focus on, I don't know who the hell they were fighting, LaFon or... it was Big Daddy Cool, Fake Edition, and Razor Fake.
And then, I just want to mention, like you alluded to, Quinn, they're all filmed in, like, some shitty locker room on, like, VHS.
Yeah, this is, like, the quality is, like, amazingly low, but, like, in a good way. It's, like, gritty.
It looks like ECW.
Yeah, it
almost does. It's really cool. Then, I thought this was over. Then we hear from Brett, and he's like,
Stone Cold, I'll see you down the road.
Awesome.
Stone Cold, I'll see you down the road.
It was. It was good. Yeah.
It was good. Then we cut to Sid yelling about everybody.
No, it's not that, but no. It's just, the typical, I'm going to get everyone because I'm the master and ruler of the world, basically.
That type of thing, you know, grinning into the camera.
Yeah.
This is where Todd shines, and I do mean that. I'm not being sarcastic.
He's good here.
He's really good because he's basically like, what the hell's going on anymore?
Yeah.
Because you think about the era that Todd started in 93. It's
peaceful and easygoing.
Just standard new generation, WWF, Sid.
Yeah, everyone's rising.
Diesel, Mabel, Adam Bomb.
Right.
What is going on with all the chaos here in the World Wrestling Federation? All right, you got the Hitman Bret Hart coming on. Stone Cold Steve Austin was there as well. And I don't know what's going on with the British Bulldog and Bret Hart. I know they're not friends. I know Bret can't stand it. And I don't trust the British Bulldog either. I don't care what anybody says. He's setting us up for something. Then you got Psycho Sid with the Hitman, and you got the choke slam, and he's down, and whoo.
This is the Vince Russo starting to throw ideas out
there. It's starting to get dark.
And, starting to get a little
the
dark.
The Toddster might not be ready for it.
A little gray, right?
Yeah.
A little shades of gray. So Todd is basically like, what's going on here? Everyone's getting chokeslammed, fighting. And I'll give the dude credit. He has energy. He is selling
this. He's good. He's a great successor to Mooney.
He is inferior, but not by much. He's still good.
He still likes the product.
He does. He has energy for it. He has zeal. So he hypes In Your House, It's Time. And then he says it's time for him to take his medication.
What?
And then it goes
to
commercial.
Really weird.
And then this is second weird thing.
Yeah.
This must be like either a production botch or a satellite feed, because we just get a black screen that says in white font, commercial break number 2.
You know what's interesting? I'm not sure if it's even a satellite feed as much as was this actually the one that was in the can, like the tape that was in the can that they, you know, sent out to...
Before it went?
Before they edited in the commercial for television.
Richard Land, I know you're listening to this. Tell us where you got this and if you know what that's what that's about. Maybe
it seems like a production tape thing because it's language like this is where you put the commercial.
Right. Maybe we're wrong.
Yeah.
We could be wrong and maybe it's just whatever. But Richard, if you know anything about that, let us know.
Yep.
So we're back and the Toddster says the Big Show rolls on.
Do you think he's saying that because of PLJ and he
Well, it's not
up?
Because of the Big Show, the wrestler.
No. Well, yeah, I'm saying the Big Show, his show.
He's calling that because he's in the PLJ studio.
He's all confused.
So. We get a graphic of an upcoming match. Owen and Bulldog versus Razor and Diesel, the fake editions.
Yeah. That looks thrilling.
Quinn, you said to me, why does Razor look so stupid?
He does. It's just his... He's like all mushy. And I just... I never got, like, why they ever thought this was a good idea. Like, it really is stupid.
It is.
And it is weird to think that, like, at the same time, they were positioning the fake Razor and Diesel to challenge for the tag titles while the Outsiders were the tag champs.
I know, it's
on
weird,
WCW.
Right?
Like, do you think... Like, I know you kind of said no, but, like, I think part of Vince wanted there to be a moment where the Outsiders were the tag champs on WCW and fake Razor and Diesel were the tag champs on WWF.
I mean, it's possible now that I think about it, but it was a bad idea. And thankfully, they didn't win the tag titles.
It's like, let's sabotage our tag division so I can have a grudge against Scott Hall and Kevin Nash and Eric Bischoff.
That's what it would have been.
Yeah.
So we get a clip. This is a great match. I'm not serious. We get a clip from Raw of fake Diesel versus Phineas. And,
and I say, hey, it's the mayor of Cobb County or wherever he's from.
Glen Rock.
Yeah. Glen Rock.
Mayor Kane.
Yeah, Mayor Kane.
Vince calls Phineas a load. He just says load. He doesn't
he's just
finish.
A load.
He's a load of something. Hillbilly Jim's at ringside, Quinn.
How is he still there?
He did nothing in 96 except wear that denim jacket
and
be useless.
Sing the dumb song and have like a goat or something with him.
I wish you weren't making that up, but it's pretty true. So I got to say this about this fake Diesel, this Kane here.
Yeah.
He is working as lazy as the real Kevin Nash.
Aww.
So there's that. That's on purpose.
He got the part right.
He got the part right. Fake Razor Mushy himself interferes, Mr. Oatmeal Face, and then Diesel with a horrible jackknife on
Phineas. He like almost drops him, but honestly, I don't blame him because Phineas is like 350 pounds or something.
Nash would have had that shit though.
Yeah, but that's a lot of weight. Like he dead. Like if you notice, he slips, but then he like deadlifts him in midair.
Cannot
so,
drop
like,
him.
I have to say, he must be actually really strong if he could like. Slip and still like no I'm gonna keep picking you up like,
that's true he did save it from being botched.
Yeah.
Todd thinks Razor and Diesel are winning the tag titles.
I mean it might have been in the cards.
I'm glad it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Though
yeah,
so Royal Rumble promo, yeah, we're doing this already with George and Adam.
Yeah, we got George and Adam already. I always got a kick out of George and Adam. You even laughed at this commercial.
I did, because I'll tell you why. So they're allegedly in the locker room in San Antonio.
Yeah.
As if like the WWF guys would already be there.
That's my favorite part about this, is the idea that these guys have been sitting in the Alamo Dome or whatever for like 2 months or whatever, waiting for the show to start.
How'd they get in?
I don't know. Well,
is nothing else going on in the Alamo
Dome? Are they like the official fans of the WWF or something?
Yeah. So they find a big boot, a giant size 16 shoe, and this is actually kind of funny. So one of them, I don't know which one's which, let's just say Adam.
I think George is the one with the glasses.
Perfect. So Adam's like, who do you think it is? And George is like, it's Yokozuna. And they show clips of Yokozuna. Mind you, Yoko hasn't wrestled since Survivor Series and never
clip,
would.
And in the clip, he doesn't have boots on.
And that's the punchline, is Adam's like, Yokozuna doesn't wear shoes.
And he like hits him in the head. He like flicks him in the head or whatever.
I laughed.
Yokozuna doesn't wear shoes.
Yeah.
So back to the Toddster, he introduces this weird ass tag match.
Very weird.
Speaking of DX, Quinn, it's Triple H and Billy Gunn.
Yeah, together at last.
The blue blood and the blue jeans.
Well, dusty jeans.
Okay, they're
or whatever
actually
they
like dust colored in this
dust
one.
Jeans. I don't know.
But they're facing the Wild Man, Mark Morrow.
Yeah. Miro.
And Jake Roberts.
And not, this is like Jake with no shirt on, like kind of drunkard looking. He looks disgusting. It's sad.
He looked better at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I swear.
I'm serious. Yeah. At like 60 or 50 something years old, he looked better than
he
here.
He looks awful here. Yeah. So the crowd is still dead. It's the same Raw. This Raw seemed terrible. Billy Gunn, not only does he have the weird dust colored pants, he has the black boots.
Yeah. It's really weird because usually when he wore those dust pants when he was in the Smoking Guns or whatever, like he had brown, like construction brown boots. Like, you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Yeah, like he had those on. So it was a weird attire there for Billy Gunn.
It is weird attire.
Yeah.
Mero has a ponytail, which is also weird.
Yeah. And also, isn't Billy Gunn like rockabilly?
No, not yet.
Okay.
That's
not yet. Okay.
He's just not with the Smoking Guns anymore.
Right. He's on his own now.
He's just
this
like,
is that weird transition period before like Honky Tonk got involved and all that
crap. He's just singles wrestler Billy Gunn.
Okay.
So, Quinn, I noticed this. The ref here, some frickin' how, is Billy Silverman.
Listen,
again.
Listen, I swear he was, like, in ECW, like, at the same exact
and
time.
And WCW.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, he was, like, everywhere. Like, was he ref for hire?
I don't know. He was in AWF, like, a year earlier,
yeah,
remember?
What was that?
Why is he everywhere?
Was he on the outs with Vince and he would kind of just do, like, freelance or something?
Are they allowed to?
I don't know. Is he a scab ref?
I never saw Earl Durrell anywhere else except for there.
Well, I mean, there is a ref union, so...
No, there's not.
Yeah, remember when the refs went on strike in 99 or whatever? Don't you remember this?
You got me.
Yeah.
I thought you were being serious. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
You know who the only ref was and not crossover? Jimmy Corderas.
Oh.
Fun fact.
Interesting.
Yep. Anyway... Quinn, you noted a few things here. One is that Sable is very like, ow, Randy.
Sable is like, this is the time period where they didn't know. Like, I think Vince only knew one way to do a pretty lady on TV.
A face pretty lady
was that she's Miss Elizabeth. Because this is like, she is ultra like Miss Elizabeth. She is like, always with a concerned look on the face.
Yep.
Clutch, like, her hand over her mouth.
Yep.
Like, oh no.
Yep.
He's gonna die or something.
Yep.
Like, and you know, in the gown and like,
yep,
the whole thing, like it's Miss Elizabeth, and that's why I always say it's, oh, Randy, like, you know, like that's what mode she's in right now.
You also noticed that she's clapping like Vanna White.
Yeah, this is really weird. So during the match she's like clapping, but then she's like walking from side to side. So you know how like when Vanna White turns the letter, she claps and then she walks to the other side of the thing.
Yeah.
And then this kept happening. Like she claps, goes to the other side, claps again,
yep,
goes back to the other side.
It's true. That really happens.
Back and forth the whole match.
One thing that happens here that I thought was very strange, Quinn, and I know you and I laughed about it, is Vince gets all mad that Triple H tags out.
Yeah, what?
In a tag
like
match.
It's, he's like, how dare he? Like, what? That's the rules, Vince. Sorry. Like, he's not even breaking any rules.
Wah, give me a break. Look what? At that. Did you see that tag what? On a part of that coward Helmsley?
So Jake signals for a DDT or another drain. I don't know. It's hard to tell, but he signals for something. Billy Gunn then reverses the DDT, and I actually cheered for it, and I feel horrible cheering for Billy Gunn.
Well, he is the one. So maybe he's the one that did that to the DDT.
Mr. Ass himself. Yeah. Future DX here.
Yeah.
They get knocked into each other and start arguing. So Jake uses this opportunity to fat himself into Triple H, I guess.
Yeah.
He just like bulks into him. I can't describe it. He just like, my yeah, gut. Quinn, you wouldn't shut up about Sable's boobs
good.
This whole thing.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm
good.
Not going to lie.
I mean, she looked pretty.
She did.
Yeah.
She was younger.
I'll be tasteful. She looked good.
She was 29.
Yeah, she was 29.
She was younger than we are.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
She did look good, though.
She did look
good.
And
not in like a, like, you know.
Well, this was before that. I feel like they like.
She wasn't sexed up or
anything.
Yeah,
they didn't like.
She just looked pretty.
She just looked like a pretty person.
It was like the last time she ever did.
Yeah.
Mero hits the wild thing on Triple Horse, and that gets the win. So, that was our main event, by the way. I guess if you can call it that.
Yeah, I guess.
Our main blast.
We got to see DX Futures. So.
Yeah. Our main blast.
I wonder what the stock price of DX Futures was at that point.
Not very high. We head back to Todd, who is so excited about Mark Marrow. At least he didn't call him Morrow this time.
Yeah, at least this time, like how he did at the beginning, he didn't do the Mark Marrow like peace sign over his eyes or whatever. Like,
ugh. Recap, folks, of Rocky Maivia with Jim Cornette trying to be his manager.
Yeah, I go, The Rock looks like shit. And he's got like the dangly, like
dangly ones,
like the streamers,
like hanging from his neck, like all around, like his neck thing that's like made of bones. I don't know. It's really weird.
And his Chia Pet haircut.
Yeah, this is like the worst.
And he has an earring.
Like The Rock was a doofus, like before he was cool or whatever.
He did look like a big doofus.
Yeah.
And Cornette tries, you know, you're going to be my manager, motherfucker. Yeah. And then Rock's like, when you lay down with dogs, you wake up with fleas.
He's like, it's said that way all across the world or something.
What?
I don't hear that every day.
So, of course, Cornette gets mad and says he can teach someone in 5 minutes to beat The Rock.
Who's he going to teach? The goon? Like,
yeah, because that whole freaking stable, those four guys that came in were Cornette's idea.
Yeah, and Camp Cornette isn't exactly rocking at this point.
No. I can just imagine Cornette being like, oh, you know, we'll get Bill Irwin in here. Who wants Bill Irwin in the WWF?
I don't know.
Tracy Smothers? Like, what planet is he on? As Vince Russo said, it's 1996, Jim Cornette. People don't care anymore.
Yeah. Go back to Kentucky or wherever you're from. That's what he said to him.
Kentucky,
like, this year
Tennessee.
On Livewire, yes. Which was probably on, like, right after this.
Like, and look, I'm not anti-Cornette. I'm saying this because it'll probably lead into what we talk about at the end of this. I'm not anti-Cornette.
But he
should just shut
irrelevant.
The hell up sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, that's all. So we go back to Todd to close it out. He says he has to leave. He's like, I need to get out of here.
And I remember I said to you, I was like, no, he has to go do his show because they probably did this right before the PLJ show.
I mean, why else would he go to the studio if he wasn't working there that day?
Right, exactly. It makes no sense for him to be there.
Yeah, make him go to that studio?
Right, in New York City.
Yeah, he didn't live in New York
City.
They
came to him, though.
Yeah.
Probably.
No, they probably did. So, to close out the show, we get they've been hyping this the whole show. I didn't mention it on purpose. They've been hyping a very special Mankind Undertaker music video.
Now, all it is just a video package with music over it. Which, like, I guess, was this the first time this
happened?
That's
what I'm thinking,
because
right?
Because Todd is like, it's the coolest music video. Like, he's so excited. He keeps calling it a music video.
And
like it's MTV
not really,
or something.
And
like,
it's not really a music video. It's like your normal
just a normal
video
hype
package
with, like, you know,
sound clips and fighting and stuff. It's
weird.
It's a recap package.
And it just goes off the air to 1996 Titan Sports underneath it.
Yep,
end.
Undertaker wants to kill Mankind. That's
right?
Kind of the bottom line.
Yeah, basically, I'm gonna kill you. Yeah, so that's the end of that show.
Not a bad show.
No, not bad at
right?
all. It was, you know, quick, entertaining watch. You know, what was it, like 50 minutes or 45 minutes?
No commercials. Thank you so much, Richard Land, for I don't know how this guy does it.
I don't know, like, is there even any more documented blast off episodes
that's
hanging around somewhere?
Quinn,
like,
and I this morning, which of course is today because we're live, we're, you know, trying to look up any more info about Blastoff, and literally, folks, besides Wikipedia,
there's nothing.
There isn't anything.
Yeah.
And Wikipedia only has it mentioned under the Mania entry, which I believe is erroneous. This is not WWF Mania.
No, there's something different about it. Like,
it's a similar show.
Right.
But it's not just Mania with a different name.
Yeah. There's a different concept going on here, and I don't know what it is, and I don't think it ever really came to fruition.
I don't know when, like, the show ended.
Yeah. I really don't.
I know that it started.
I mean, it could have gone off right after this episode. Like,
right.
It could have.
I know it started September 21st, 96. That's documented. And I know I saw one of the very early ones in 96, you know, in September or October. I think you said you did too, Quinn. You saw one?
Yeah, I think so. Because WGN, I could get it at my dad's or something, like, but it wasn't at my mom's because it just different parts of Jersey could get WGN.
Different cable, yeah. So I saw like one, I think, in 96. I don't know when it ended. It might have ended in the early 97. This might have been the last one for all we know.
What's weird is, if I'm remembering right, I probably didn't even see this show from like the beginning, like, because I didn't remember the opening graphics, but I swear I remember Todd being in a WPLJ studio.
I remember that
at
too.
Some point. Like,
I didn't realize it was WPLJ,
but
I definitely remember the studio.
Like,
yep.
With the tapes in the back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So my thoughts on this, Quinn, are this. We were talking about this after we watched it.
Mm-hmm.
You can see, because Vince Russo didn't have the book yet. He was
part of the book. He had a couple pages.
he wrote the foreword.
Yeah.
He was becoming influential, but there was still very much a committee at this point.
Right, because a lot of that Hawk Bradshaw crap is
Jesse
like,
James.
Yeah, Jesse James.
Flash
all that
Funk.
Junk is very Cornette-y.
Right. Yeah. It's very Cornette-y. And you can see the good versus the bad as far as what was going on.
The main
time.
Event scene seems to be firmly in Vince Russo's hands, though, at this point.
And why is that? Shades of Grey. Actual motivations for the characters.
Chaos. And like, animosity for things.
But
like,
it's not the Russo that he would later become typecast for, which is the swerve for the sake of the swerve.
This is well written, and like, I love the ideas that Vince Russo had in that time of intersecting storylines. Like,
right.
This guy doesn't like this guy, but because, you know, he had a match with one other guy that, you know, now he doesn't like that guy also, but in turn, the person he's feuding with might help them. He might not.
Right.
Like, it's like,
that's the best part.
Yeah, it's just all confusing.
I think it's well summed up with the Austin Bulldog Brett thing, because Austin clearly does not like Bret Hart, right?
Right.
Now, Bulldog and Brett don't get along either.
Right.
But that does not mean that Bulldog likes Austin.
No.
Just because Austin doesn't like Brett, that doesn't mean Bulldog and Austin need to like each other.
Well, heels shouldn't like each other either way.
Why should they like anybody?
They're always after themselves.
Right.
Right?
So but Russo nailed it.
Yeah.
If that's him, I think it is.
Well, it seems like him because it's so drastically different than this old plotting junk.
I'm gonna challenge you to a handicap match because you interfered.
Yeah, what? Like,
like, literally, folks,
it was like cringy. Like,
I was watching at the time. I know you were too, Quinn. Yep. And maybe most of you were. No one gave a shit about any of that stuff.
About jammies and all
about
that.
About jammies and Bradshaw and Flash Fuck.
Yeah.
And like all this stuff.
Those guys were crap.
No one cared.
Yeah.
Fake Razor and Diesel. People cared about the real characters with real motivations, like Bulldog and Owen, like Bret Hart, like
Austin.
Sid, Shawn Michaels, Austin. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Even Undertaker and Mankind.
I always found Michaels actually one of the most interesting guys of this time because he was like this weird wild card where it's like he was portrayed as the best athlete.
Yes, he was.
But he had such an attitude problem.
He was an asshole, yeah.
And he would get himself in trouble with the likes of Sid and stuff.
Right, exactly.
Like, yeah, like, it was interesting.
He would just go a little too far over the line.
Yeah.
But folks, we want to continue to find the line. So if you want to drop us one, you can do that by reaching us at Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. Of course, Quinn, they can check us out on a plethora of places.
Yep. There's iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher.
Player.fm.
Yeah.
And of course, the website.
Yeah, the website, ovppodcast.com.
So, folks, if you have any suggestions, what should we review? If you have any agreements or disagreements with the Rushmore and Death Valley, anything at all, let us know. We are happy to hear from our fans.
Yes, we love to hear from them.
That's right, we really do. So, folks, have a great rest of your day and a great rest of your week. We will see you next week for episode 29, and after that, it's the season finale.
Wow.
Wow. Folks, have a great day. We will see you soon.
See ya.
It just boggles my mind. People have such short-term memories. Here's a guy in my mind, Shawn Michaels, that replaces the Hitman Bret Hart as the fightingest champion of all time. Puts the title on the line constantly when he had it. Every night if somebody wanted it, right? He's out there taking risks for you, the fans, because Sean said it. People of the World Wrestling Federation, all the fans show up to see one thing, and that's the Heartbreak Kid, and I agree with that. Yeah, there's other WWF superstars just as awesome, but Shawn Michaels goes above and beyond. Charity functions as the World Wrestling Federation champion, there's a million of them. Sean shows up for every single one. He's been on this radio show a number of times. I just call him, Sean, I need you for something. Todd, what time? You want me there? I'm there. That's the kind of guy Sean is. And then people say Shawn Michaels isn't a role model. See, I think just the opposite is true. For the compassion he showed towards Jose Lothario shows he's not a one-dimensional person. That's a role model to me. Somebody who shows compassion for their fellow man. He gave up the World Wrestling Federation title, a childhood dream, because a friend, a mentor, was in trouble. And we all know the World Wrestling...
Will you stop?